With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where do you come from?
Hi, my name is Ruth and I'm from Winston Old Town County, Dublin. I'm 37 years of age and thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure, Ruth. Ruth, we know each other through Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been following your story. So from the very beginning, do you want to tell me your story?
Yeah, no problem. So myself and Nigel, my husband, are married 10 years, September just gone. After a year of being married, like nearly every other couple, we decided we wanted a family. Had it all planned out in our head, what we wanted, where we wanted, all the kind of stuff. So, yeah, a year went on, no sign of getting pregnant or anything like that. So we decided, oh, sure, look, we'll go for a few tests and see what happens. So went for a few tests and my GP, everything came back fine. And then we got referred into Beaumont Private to speak to a consultant. Talking to him, and he was like, oh, go for more tests. We're like, yeah, okay. Went for more tests, and he was like, oh, I'm going to, nothing really came up in the tests again. Oh, I'm going to refer you on to the private rooms in the rotunda.
Okay.
So we went to the rotunda anyway, got assigned to a consultant, very nice man, and he said, look, it's probably just stress related. You know, you're young, you're fine. I'm going to put you on Clomid, which is a one tablet. Try that for a short time, see how you get.
What is that for?
That is basically for to regulate your body and to make sure you're ovulating when you should be ovulating and you get your cycle when you should get your cycle and that type of thing. So that was grand.
And was there anything with your, like, was there any problems with your cycle for you growing up? There was no problem at all?
No, not a thing. So that was grand. Went on to the Clomid, and the Clomid was a horrible tablet. Oh, Jesus, it was awful. It made me feel crap. Like, it made me feel, just made me feel crap in myself. I put on a bit of weight. Just felt shit, basically, when I was on this. But I said, look, just suck it up. If it's going to help, happy days. So I went on that. Still no sign of conceiving or anything like that. So we're like, okay, back to the drawing board. Went back in to the doctor. Like, look, nothing's going to happen here. So again, he sent us on more tests. Myself and Nigel went on more tests. And he put us on more medication. I can't remember now what the medication was at the time. But he put us on another course of medication. Nothing happened then. So this was kind of going on and on and on. And nothing was coming out of it. So eventually he said, look, he says, what about starting IVF? We're like, yeah, sure, we'll give it a bash. So started IVF in the rotunda. SIMS, what it's called now. And
what is it called?
SIMS, it's called now.
What's that stand for, do you know?
I don't know. I should know, but I don't know. Yeah. So we started IVF in the rotunda. I was put on medication. So basically with IVF, you have to go through a rigmarole of scans, bloods, injections. It's tough. Like, it is tough going. This is all timed medication. So you have to maybe have an injection in the morning or you have to have an injection in the evening. And then maybe take a medication in between that. So I could never inject myself. I just was not able to do it. So Nigel had to do it. So he'd be injecting me in my belly. Sometimes he would have to inject me kind of in my lower back as well. So this would go on for about 2 weeks. And you're in between those 2 weeks, you're going into the rotunda getting scanned by the nurses to make sure that your lining is doing what you're doing. Basically, it was shutting your body down to prepare you for egg retrieval. And this medication was making your eggs grow to make sure you had eggs for egg retrieval.
Okay.
So we did that for about 2 weeks, and we went in then for egg retrieval into the rotunda, and we got eggs, which was amazing, fantastic. So that was fine then. So then we transferred one, and you have to wait then 2 weeks after that for a result. Them 2 weeks were just the worst 2 weeks ever. They're the slowest 2 weeks in the world. Like, you're watching the clock, you're watching the days. So many people say, whatever you do, don't test, don't test, don't test. And we didn't actually. We said, no, we'll wait for the 2 weeks. So I know some people do it on day 10, some people do it on day 11, but we said, no, we'll wait for day 14. So they say to test very early in the morning when you go to the loo, you know, when we all get up in the morning, we go to the loo, test it then. So, of course, 5 o'clock that morning, like, I got up and wide awake, like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the loo, I'm going to go to the loo. Tested, nothing. Came up not pregnant. So we didn't really mind too much because it was so new to us at that stage. We're like, oh, look, it's probably just an error. You know, we need to calm down, relax, this type of thing. So we had two more eggs or two more embryos to implant. So we went again. So I basically had to wait for my period to come again. And then when we go again, I'd be put on meds and then we go again. Went again, still a fail. Said, okay, sure, look, we'll go again. But before the third time, the doctor recommended we do more tests and kind of add in additional, how do you say, medication type things. As in, we got like glue, it was called, that the consultant that was doing the transfer would put in glue and help, this supposedly help you, help the embryo stick more or implant more into you. And things like this, like, and then there was intralipids. They recommended doing intralipids. Basically, it's like a drip that goes into your arm before transfer. And that, again, that's supposed to help things kind of move along and help your body, help your immune system, all this type of thing. So did that. We basically did every test.
How traumatic is that?
At the time, you're on a roller coaster. You don't, it's like you're swimming underneath and you just don't get up for air. You keep going and going and going and going. Like, at the time, I was like, okay, sure, we'll just do it. Sure, we'll just do it. Sure, we'll just do it. And you're going, 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 going. You're like, you're in this bubble. And nothing is going to burst until you know that you're pregnant. Like, so we just kept going and going and going. And, like, we're still in work. Like,
this is what I wanted to ask you, yeah.
Like, I'm still working full-time and I just still in work. My work has been absolutely amazing. Like, so, so kind. And my boss knew all along what was going. She's like, look, when you have to go. Just give me the heads up. No one needs to know. Just go. Do what you have to do. It's no problem. She was amazing. So, yeah, so the third transfer came, did it all again, waited the 2 weeks, nothing. So I was like, oh, Nigel, like, what in the name of Jesus? And then at that stage, you start to question, like, what is going on? Like, what is going on? And I said to him, like, what's wrong? Like, this shouldn't be happening. Like, I'm a woman. Like, a woman's job is to bear a child. Like, that's what we're here to do. And, like, it just makes you feel shit, like, it really does, because, like, you see every Tom, Dick and Harry, like, and they've fallen pregnant, and, oh, it's at that stage, it started to get to me, because I'm just like, this isn't right, like, this is not the way it should be, but it's the way it is. So we kind of talked about it, and we're like, we felt like maybe we'd give it one more bash, but we would move hospitals or clinics. Mm. So we went over to ReproMed in Dundrum.
Okay.
And we met over there with a consultant, very, very nice consultant, and we did the whole rigmarole again. This time around, we got 2 eggs that we could implant. So that was grand. So off we went again, got on the bike, and away we went again. And we found actually that clinic was actually a little bit more attentive to us, because we found out when the other hospital transfer did the transfer, they actually transferred on the wrong day. It actually should have been a day later because of my cycle and because of the way I was responding to medication. So we're like, oh God, that maybe that's it. Like, maybe that's what the problem was. Mm. Happy days.
So did that give you, even though you were angry, did it give you hope?
Absolutely it did. Okay. And I was like, oh God, maybe this is it. Maybe this is it. So we went and we transferred on day 6. And like, oh yeah, this is going to, it gave us an awful lot of hope, in fairness. And like, this is it, and boom, no, here we go again. So
was that more difficult, like, is the word failure, do we say failure, like, when
yeah,
is that
yeah,
what is that yeah, the word failure,
yeah,
so was that failure worse than any other? Or
I suppose it was in a way, because we felt that that particular clinic for us was a bit more, how would you say, not attentive, but they seemed to be looking into our case a lot with more detail than what the other clinic was. And we're like, we were so convinced that it was going to work, because we had the consultant had said, right, I think we should transfer on this day and night, right, you know, this could work. And because we're giving you hope, we really, really thought this was going to be it. But no. So, and with that particular clinic, you had to go. So you did a home pregnancy test. I'll never forget it at home. But you had to go in as well and get your bloods taken just to make sure that it was a fail. So I said to Nigel, I used to get the train or the Lewis over to Dundrum. And I said, Nigel, I'm not going to go over there like and stand on the Lewis with a gansy load of people. I go about their business. I couldn't do it. And he's like, oh, just do it. And I said, right, okay. So off I went. And I remember standing in the Lewis. The Lewis was jam-packed. Like people going about their business, going to work, going to school, whatever. And here I was, like, the people, like, realise where I'm going. Like, I've just found out, like, that my IVF cycle hasn't worked. I'm going to get a bloods to confirm it. Like, it's just mad, like, do you know? It's just, it was barbaric, like, it really was. So I went into the clinic.
That's really, really important, isn't it? And that's where we say that we have no idea what's going on.
Absolutely.
With the person beside me. Because you are 100% alone in your own fight, stepping on that Lewis.
Yeah.
Absolutely traumatised.
Yeah. With, like, 30, 40 other people, you know, and me not knowing what they're going through, but I remember just, and I said it to Nigel when I got off the train, I rang him and I was like, do you know what? I stammered to my mom that Lewis, and I says, no one knows what's going on. I says, like, people just think I'm going to work, but that's not the case. Like, I'm going in to get bloods to confirm, yeah, no, you're not pregnant. You know, that type of way, which is mad, like, when you think of it like that. So, got the bloods done and, yeah, came back. No, didn't work. So we're like, right, okay. So off we went again. Fifth time lucky. We said we'll go for it. Did it all again and, no, didn't work. So at that stage, we were just like, what's going on? Like, what's wrong with us? Like, what is wrong with us? And I remember the consultant sitting down and said, look, you've tried everything. You've done every test. You've taken every blood test. We've done every examination possible. You could go again, but you're going to start throwing your money away. And, like, it's expensive enough as it is. Like, I mean, it's $5,000 a cycle, like, so it's not cheap by any means. Like, and then you have any additional tests on top of that you would be charged, which we knew about. So he sat us down and he was like, I think your only option is surrogacy. And at the time, I looked at Nigel and I was like, what is he talking about? What the hell? Like, surrogacy? Like, this, no way. Like, Jeannie Mac. So,
Did it hit you like a ton of bricks? Or is it just...
No, I was more annoyed that he even suggested it. Okay. Yeah, I was really annoyed. Like, and I remember walking and saying to Nigel, what's he talking about surrogacy? Like, why is he going even going down that route? Like, that's... Like, we're not that bad. I know we've had 5 failed IVF cycles, but no way. Like, absolutely no way. So, at that stage... We just needed a break. Like, because it was constantly going, like, you know. And
5 cycles, how long is that?
5 cycles. When did we start? We started in 10 years married today.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, no, 10 years married in September. No, my maths isn't great. I think we started in... Our first investigations were in 2012, and then we finished up IVF in 2017, I want to say. So between, like, starting out in IVF, like, five years.
What does that do to a relationship?
It's stressful. It's very stressful, and, like, Nigel would be a lot stronger than me, like, you know. He kind of held it together very well. And, like, again, behind closed doors, like, I went to work. I work on reception, so I put the happy face on. Everything's hunky-dory. That's what you do. Like, same as Nigel, he went to work, put the happy face on. And, but it was tough. Like, I was blaming myself an awful lot. like, as I said, like, I was like, Nigel, this isn't right. Like, this isn't right. Like, I even said to him, look, if you want to leave me, like, I have no qualms about that. Like, you want a family, I want a family, but obviously it's not going to happen. So if you want to go, find yourself another lovely lady and away you go, no problem. It was very, very hard, very hard. I just felt crap. Like, you know, I just felt so bad that I couldn't give my husband a child, you know, that type of way. And I know there's people out there that don't want children, and that's absolutely fine. But we had it in there, you know, yourself, like when you find your husband or your wife or whatever, you know what your life plan's going to be. And it just wasn't working. And it was soul destroying. And then you had all the friends, of course, falling pregnant. And yeah, of course, you were happy for them. But, you know, the christenings were coming up. The first birthdays were coming up. And I remember one Saturday, we were invited to one of the kids' birthday. And Nigel says, oh, I have to go to work. And I was like, Nigel, would you not just come down with me? Like, and he's like, to be honest, I don't want to be around them. Because the lads will just be talking all about the kids. Like, which is fine. Mm-hmm. He says, but what do I say? Mm-hmm. And like, I was like, well, yeah, I know, I suppose. Like, but I had to do the same, like, you know. So it was very, very, very hard. But we were very open with each other and talked about it an awful lot. You know, men, like, they would hold things in a lot more than what we would. So he eventually broke down, actually, one night. And I was glad he did, because he was holding in for so, so long. Like, it was more me crying and moaning than him. Like, so I was glad that he broke down as well. And he kind of felt the better of it as well after he did that too. Like, but like, IVF and infertility can split up a couple. Like, I've known a few couples that have just gone their separate ways because the pure stress and the emotions attached to it. And I can totally understand where they're coming from. Totally understand. But thankfully we were okay, and so, we kind of got through it, like, together, like, you know. But
so take it back then to the surrogacy.
So then the doctor, yeah, was all about surrogacy. And we were like, ah, no, not going to happen. He's talking through his arse type thing, you know. So that was fine anyway. So we went away and we just left it. We just parked it all aside. And we just said, no, we says we'll just take a break. So I remember we booked 2 holidays. And they're like, we're going to live our life for a while, like, and just enjoy. So we did that. And we went on our 2 holidays. And we were loving life and all. And then the summer that Rosanna Davison said that she was expecting with her husband through international surrogacy, of course, we're delighted for them and all that. And I said to Nigel, like, if Rosanna can do it, why can't we?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah,
you know? Yeah. So, and I remember she was on the Late Late and all that. And I kind of just started doing my own research online. Didn't now think we were ever going to go down the route of it. But I just said, I'll have a quick look and see what's out there. And it's a minefield, absolute minefield. And it just kind of went from there. I contacted some agencies. We went to Ukraine. I contacted some agencies. They came back with prices and this, that and the other. And then I contacted our solicitor, Annette Hickey, down in Kilkenny. And we met with her and she advised what clinics to or not to go to.
So in Ireland, is just so we can, you know, help as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. In Ireland, is there specific solicitors that deal with this?
Yes, there is. I know of 2, a lady called Tracy Horn and Annette Hickey, who we used, who is amazing. She's just fantastic. She's extremely knowledgeable about the whole surrogacy, the legal side of it, which is so, so, so important. Anybody that would look into doing international surrogacy, that's your first thing to do, is to go and talk to a legal professional, because you can go down a very, very wrong road when it's international surrogacy. So that's really important. So Annette Hickey is just, she's up there. Like, she's really, really good. Very nice person, very down to earth. You know, she's a mother herself, so, which also helps. So, yeah, so we looked into it anyway, and it just kind of snowballed from there. In November 2019, myself and Nigel went, we picked our agency. We went over to Ukraine for the weekend. We told all the family we were going on a weekend away to Paris, because we didn't tell anybody we were doing this. And like, our family had known about the IVF, but we just said we just keep to ourselves for the minute to see how things go. So we went over anyway, and we had to get a heap of blood work done when we were over there. You could get that done here, or you could go over to Ukraine and get it done with the hospital over there. And we said we would go over, because it gave us an opportunity to see their clinics and meet them and talk to them and all that, and kind of get a feel for them. So we did that anyway, and it was great. Now, I had to say, the coordinator's in there. The coordinator met us, and she spent literally the 2 days with us, like going from A to B to get this test done, to get that test done. Like, we had to get chest x-rays and everything done. It was mental. And what was even more mad, you know yourself here, like getting a chest x-ray, you could be waiting nearly a year.
Yeah.
But over there, you got into a taxi and you went to a clinic and you got one, and we converted it, the currency, and I was like, €13 per chest x-ray. Like, can you imagine? It was just mental. Like, their hospitals and their medical treatment is fantastic over there. It really, really is fantastic. So we did that anyway.
Why did you pick, like, we're international surrogacy. Is there lots of places, like, is it international? Really?
Yeah, so international, you can go basically to Ukraine, you can do it in America, or you can do it in Canada. Okay. America and Canada are extremely expensive. Okay. Extremely expensive. So our budget was for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of couples, Irish couples, do go to Ukraine for financial reasons. But that's why we chose Ukraine. So we, as I said, we went over and we got all our blood work and all that done. That was fine. And then we signed our contracts there and then. And it just went from there then. That was November. And then the following year then. So basically when you sign the contract, they have to assign a surrogate to you.
Okay.
So we got note of, we got a surrogate's profile. So the communication with the surrogacy is all done by email. And I had a WhatsApp number for my coordinator at the time. So I could WhatsApp her and she would send me kind of the official details by email. Mm. So the communication was always there. Like, you know, I'm a diva. Like, I'd always make sure I heard from them once a week. Like, now I'd be like, you're wrecking their heads over there. And I was like, well, look, it has to be done.
It's my baby, yeah.
Yeah, it has to be done. So they were very good at coming back to me all the time. So the surrogate sent us over the profile of the surrogate. And we went through it. And we're like, yes, she seems fine. The surrogates have to have, like, they sign their contracts as well. Mm-hmm. And they have to have had a child as well. So Irina, our surrogate, has two boys, and that was fine. So everything went grand after that. So that was early the next year. So we went back over then. Is that January 2020? Yeah, January 2020 then. We were going to use our own eggs because our eggs were never the issue with IVF. Mm. It was the implantation. I could never hold the pregnancy. Like, everything went clockwork. Like, that was, again, going back to the IVF, like, everything went perfect. Even the doctor said, you're agreeing to the meds, your lining is perfect, the scans are perfect, your bloods are perfect, the transfers went perfect, just won't implant. So I said, well, we'll use our own eggs for the surrogacy then, because obviously that wasn't the problem. So we did that. So I started doing part IVF here in, I went back to the Rotunda, did it there in the Rotunda, and I told them that I was going to go over to Ukraine. This is for surrogacy, and I was going to go over to Ukraine for the egg retrieval. And a lot of hospitals in Ireland actually don't do it. They call it satellite screening. And a lot of them don't do it. And the Rotunda said they would do it for us, which we were very thankful about. So that was grand. So I started on all the meds again, all the injections. Like, it's mad. Like, your belly and everything bloats up and you have bruises and all. I remember through one of the cycles, actually, Nigel had to inject my back. I can't remember the reason for it now, but he had to inject my back. But there was very little space left because I was bruised so much. And the pain of it. He's like, I have to go in here where there's a bruise. I have nowhere else to go. And I remember just standing in the kitchen, crying my eyes out. I was like, Nigel, this is so sore. It's so sore. And he's like, I know, but I have to do it. I have to do it. And I was like, just do it. Don't tell me. Just do it. Just do it. So, like, it's a lot. Like, it's a lot. So I had to start all that again. I did all that. And then in a very short space of time, then I had to travel to Ukraine. So again, I said it to my boss. She was very good. She's like, look, when you need to go, just go. It's fine. I went out of work with a chest infection. Yeah, but look, it was fine. So we went to Ukraine. When I got the go ahead from the doctors in Ukraine and the doctors here to go, we got on a flight and off we went. And I did egg retrieval over there. So that was great. It was a very different experience to doing it here, yeah. But it was very funny because it was like in Ukraine, like, it's, their hospitals are very old style. like she came, we went upstairs and like in the rotunda here in Dublin, like, or in Repromed, like Nigel could always come into the cubicle with me and he stayed there to like come back out of the theatre. But here in Ukraine, our coordinator's like, no, Nigel can't come up because you're going to be sharing a room with other women. And I was like, oh, okay, grand. So Nigel went downstairs. Off I trotted upstairs. And I was like, going into one of your bedrooms there upstairs, there was like four beds. And that was your ward. And I was like, where's the curtains? And like there was a ward up there as well. And it was just mad. It was like going upstairs in your own house. Like,
oh.
And she was like, so just get yourself sorted there and we'll be back. I was like, okay, grand. So she had sent me details of what to bring with me. And I kind of thought, again, being here, you're in hospital, you're given a gown.
Yeah.
But again, Ukraine, you're not given a gown in this particular clinic. And I was like, okay. So she's like, oh, just, you know, bring pyjamas and this, that, and your, that's grand. So I brought me jammies with me. That's fine. Sitting there in the bed with my jammies. And the coordinator, Maria, came in and she was like, is that what you're wearing? I was like, sorry? She's like, is that what you're wearing? And I was like, yeah, my pyjamas. She's like, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're going for egg retrieval. And I was like, yeah, sure, I can just take my bottoms off and I go into theatre. Mm. Oh, no, we don't do that here. I was like, okay, so what do I do? And she was like, hang on. So off she went and she came back with a nurse. And they're there talking in their own language. I hadn't a breeze what was going on. And they opened the wardrobe that was in the room. And she took out a housecoat, right? And I was looking like, what the hell? She's like, oh, the nurse said you must wear this. And I took it off and I swear to God, it'd fit your girls. And I looked at it and I was like, this is very small. And she started laughing and I started laughing. She's like, this is all we have. I was like, have you not got? I was trying to describe what the gowns were here in Ireland.
Yeah.
But she kind of couldn't comprehend what I was saying. I was like, okay, she, look, we'll do it. So, like, at that stage, as I say to my friends, you have your box on the table that many times, you really don't care anymore, do you know what I mean? Like, what's another, like, room, like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, she came back at me and I was dressed well. And I tell you, the house got barely covered my behind. And I had to walk out of this room, out reception and into the theatre. And when I walked out, like, oh, I was mortified. I was absolutely mortified. And you could see a heap of nurses. I'm sure they were what they were saying in their own language, right? And I was like, oh, God almighty.
Dignity at the door.
Oh, stop. It was unreal. So anyway, went into the theatre and sure then they knocked me out. And sure, I didn't know what happened after that.
Oh, my God.
So that was grand. Anyway, so got over all that. Anyway, that was fine. And we had gotten 10 eggs. Which we're delighted about. Absolutely delighted about. So
why 10 then compared to before? Didn't...
Well, you see, 10, I would have got, I can't remember the exact numbers I got when I was doing the IVF here. But it dwindles down, you see. Okay. You'll always get a large amount.
Right.
And you see, then they have to fertilise.
Okay.
So they will always dwindle off. Like you get like 20, but they'll always dwindle off. You'll never have the same amount the whole way through.
Okay.
Like. So we had 10, which was marvellous. We were delighted. And Nigel had to give his sample as well. So we were thrilled about that. So we were going to get a test called a PGD test. You could get it done here as well. But at the time, it was far too expensive. We just didn't have the money to get it done here. And basically what this test does, it actually tests the inside of the embryos. Whereas the normal tests just do the outside, the kind of the shell. But this kind of goes in, sees there any abnormalities. So that was grand. So they did that test and it was about 2 weeks till the results came back. So we flew home. There was no point of staying there. So we got home anyway. And 2 weeks later, the test came back. And I think 7 of them weren't viable. They had different abnormalities. So they weren't viable. It would have been pointless transferring them because they wouldn't have implanted. So there was no point. So there was 3 left. And we're like, oh, my God. So we're thankful there was 3. They did ask us at the time as well, did we want to know the gender? Like, the science is unbelievable. And we're like, what? They never said that to us in Dublin here. But they were able to tell us what the gender was of each egg. So we knew, or embryo. So we knew what the gender was, so we knew which one we were going to transfer. So that was grand anyway.
So was that a decision?
What do you mean?
The embryo unit. So you knew that Lottie was going to be the Lottie?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we knew we were transferring a female embryo. Yeah, yeah.
And so was that a discussion point in boy or girl or?
Not really. Like, we just said, what we do, like, and we just randomly said, look, we'll just go with the girl and see what happens. Like, we were so, when we started all this, we weren't hopeful at all, to be honest, Rebecca, because we'd had so many fails. We weren't putting our full effort, just to say, into it, because we'd gone through so many fails. We said, look, let's just go with a girl. Mm. Not really kind of thinking too deep into it, yeah, to be honest with you. So that was grand. So we did that. That was fine. We chose the gender of the embryo. That was grand. And then the surrogate, she started her medication, her side. And everything was going fine for her. And then she went in on the 18th of May last year to... Was it 18th of May? Yeah, 18th of May last year for her transfer. So they're implanting it into her. And June bank holiday last year, I was out washing the windows. I had to keep myself busy. Like, we were supposed to get the results on the Friday, but the Irina was supposed to come up to the hospital to get her bloods done, but she lives 9 hours away from the hospital. Okay. So she asked, could she get her bloods done in, like, a local health clinic, I'm assuming what it was. And they said, yeah, but the only thing about that is we're going to be a day late giving the results to Ruth and Nigel. But we didn't mind. What's another day? So the Saturday then, we got an email from Marina, our coordinator, and it's gas, because I said to Nigel, now, when this email comes through, you're reading it and you're opening it. I've had to pee on a stick the last 5 times. I've had to see the no pregnant, so it's your turn now. So he said, okay. So I was there washing my windows anyway. And next of all, the phone binged. Nigel was out in the garage. And I said, quick, come in. So he came in anyway. And I said, there you go. And he said, oh, how do I read? And I said, just pull it down and read it. Jesus. You know, so he's there. And he started reading it, right? And he's like reading it to himself. And we have an island like that. And he's lying across the island. And I was over there. And I said, Nigel, read it out loud. And he's like, hang on. I said, read it out loud. Stop reading it to yourself.
I was like, give me the phone. Yeah. Give it.
So then he started reading it out and it had Dear Ruth and Nigel, and then the next words, congratulations. Oh, I swear to God, I dropped to the floor and just started crying, because I just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And even Nigel was like, he was even crying, like, you know. And we're like, oh my God, compose ourselves, because our house is like Houston Station. We always have family coming in all the time. I was like, we have to compose ourselves. But we just couldn't believe it actually said you're pregnant. We just couldn't believe it. It was just amazing. It really was. It was like a dream come true. Like, and we just stood in the kitchen. We didn't say anything to either of us. We just stood there in complete awe. Like, and then I was like, oh, here, we have to wipe the eyes now and read this properly, just in case we're missing something. Mm. And we read it over and over again. And yeah, she said, yeah, everyone was grand. And Irina's HCG level was quite high, which means she was really, really pregnant as such. God. So the relief of it, we just couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it was actually happening, because, as I said, we didn't put our full hope into surrogacy because we had so many fails. Mm. We were just like, gosh, look, we'll go for it and see what happens. Like, never, ever in this wildest dreams did you think it would work. And yeah, we were pregnant. We just couldn't believe it. Like, amazing, absolutely amazing. So that was the Saturday, and we didn't tell anybody. And I remember that.
How did you keep a secret? How did you keep it?
I don't know. To be quite honest with you, I don't know how we actually did it. I don't know how we did it. And that we were still quite worried because it was so early. Mm. You know, we're like, you know yourself, anything can happen at any stage, and we were still quite worried. So we said, we'll just hold fire, like, till we get like till 8 weeks and go from there. So we did that, and then I think it was Father's Day came up then. When is Father's Day?
June.
Mm. It was Father's Day then, and I said to Nigel, you know, we'll give the two granddads a card and have it in it. So because we would get a scan with every email, so we printed off the scan and we threw it into the cards anyway, and went down to my mum and dad first and gave it to my dad. You know, dad's like, dad is in the kitchen making a cup of tea, and I said, oh, there you go, happy Father's Day. He said, oh yeah, grand, thanks, you know. And I went out to the sunroom to mum, and Nigel was talking to me, and dad says, what's this now? And you could hear her, you know, but mum didn't take any heed to him. And came out and he's like, is this because of Ukraine?
Ah, oh, Jesus.
I says, yeah, Dad. I says, you're going to be grounded again. Mm-hmm. And Dad's like, what? And then he says to Mum, here, have a look at that. Have a look at that. Mm-hmm. And it was just a little scam. Mum was absolutely delighted, like over the moon. Like, and then we did the same for Nigel's dad, gave it to him, and he was thrilled, like absolutely thrilled. So that's all we told. We didn't tell. I told my sister. Didn't tell anybody else. And then July came then, and we had the, was it, must have been the 8-week scan. And we had a big, not big, a family barbecue. And people kind of were like, why are you having a barbecue and all? And we're like, oh, just get the families together. Like, we haven't done it in ages. It'd be nice, yada, yada. And they're like, oh, okay. And none of them had a breeze what we were doing, which was even better. Yeah, that's it. They had all known we'd been through IVF. So I got cards done up online. And I had, like, say, for my sister, I got, even though she knew, I got her one, like, you know, you're going to be an auntie. Thank and God. For my brother, you're going to be an uncle, this type of thing. And we put them into envelopes. And we got food in and all. We made a big deal of it. And, you know, sure, I couldn't eat at all. Like, oh, I was a nervous wreck, like, you know. So that was grand. Anyway, so after the food, we just handed out the envelopes. Didn't say it to anybody and just handed out the envelopes. And I have a video on my phone. My sister-in-law, I swear, she just screamed the house down. She was like, oh my God. She screamed the house. And then there was tears everywhere. Absolute tears everywhere. Tears of joy.
Yeah.
Tears of absolute joy. Yeah. Tears of absolute joy. And it was such a relief then. And then I kind of felt real. I was like, oh God. And then once the family knew, we knew this is actually happening. Like, and everybody was just so, so happy for us. So happy for us. Which was great. Which is really great. So then from then, it was just constant emails and communication with the agency, asking how Irina was doing, make sure she was doing okay and that type of thing. And it was the 20-week scan, the, you know, the important scan. It was only really after that that I could kind of relax. I got very anxious about it. After the kind of the bubble of saying, yeah, we're pregnant, I got quite anxious and worried about it. And then I think one of the days I just started crying, just non-stop crying. I remember driving home from work and I was just crying non-stop when I got home. And I was just like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, are you not happy? I says, I am. I'm over the moon. But I just don't know. And then the more we talked about it, I think because of the failed IVF cycles, I'd buried a lot of that emotion. And because we were constantly going, 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 I wasn't giving myself a chance to think about it.
Take a breath.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. And just take a step back and say, this is what we're doing. And, you know, and I think everything just came up to boiling point because my emotions had turned to happiness instead of the failure. I think everything just came up. And I just exploded, absolutely exploded. Like, and even though I just get worried, it's like, well, maybe you should talk to your sister, you know? And but I knew what it was. I just knew it was all my emotions.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Coming up. And but I was quite anxious through the whole thing, and there was days where I like, God, like our stranger is carrying our baby millions of miles away, and like we have to trust this person that we never met her. A lot of people do go over to meet their surrogates, but because of COVID we couldn't. So we were trusting this stranger to carry our child, assuming that she wasn't going out and, you know, smoking and drinking and partying at 3 o'clock in the morning. We had to assume everything. And wow, that was hard. Mm. That was really hard. And we would get pictures of the bump obviously developing and of Irina. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, Nigel, that should be me. That should be me. Like, even though I was so overjoyed that she was carrying her baby and I knew that she would do an amazing job, I just sometimes I was like, that should be me. Like, it shouldn't be Irina. And I was like, I know, but look what we have. Like, look what we have. Look what Irina's doing. And I kind of had to keep focusing on that, what Irina was doing for us, you know. So I did still have up and down days throughout the pregnancy. You know, but Irina was great. She was just...
But you can understand that.
Yeah.
You can understand that whole thing of the pure anxiety.
Yeah.
The pure pit in your stomach. That. Yeah.
And I'd never experienced anxiety before that. Never had it. Like, even through all the IVF, like, and so many people say to me, God, you're so brave. You just keep going. I was like, but you have to. You have to. You have to keep going. And it was only until we got the confirmed pregnancy and I could see Irina carrying our baby, that's when the anxiety just got in on me big time. And just worry and anxiety. Yeah. And, you know, just that's all it is, like, you know. And sometimes she'd send us a picture of herself, like, and then she'd look tired. And I'd be like, oh, my God, why is she so tired? Is she not eating properly? And this, that, and the other, you know. You come very precious about them. Even your surrogate, you come very precious about them because, you know, they're carrying your baby, like. So, but as time went on, she was great. Like, she had a very good pregnancy, thank God. And she was fine. So, Lottie was due on the 31st of January. So we had planned to go over maybe a week or so before that. But then COVID hit really hard and all the flights started. Our flight got cancelled like twice and it was just a nightmare. And then we had to fly through... Ryanair used to do direct, which was dead handy. Mm. But Ryanair cancelled all the flights to Ukraine. So we had to go from Dublin to the Netherlands, Netherlands to Ukraine. And Netherlands, the week we were due to fly, they brought in the antigen testing.
Yeah.
Then anybody that was coming into the country had to get an antigen test, as well as us getting the PCR test. So I was freaking out. I was like, for God's sake. And I was like, but we're only actually going into the airport. We're not actually leaving the airport. But no, they wanted it for the airport as well. So that was a kind of a bit manic the week that we were going. And then, obviously, I finished up work. And Nigel was finished a few days later. And we'd get our PCR tests. And then, you know yourself, like, it's in your head, like, oh, I'm getting a sore throat. I'm getting a runny nose.
Yeah.
Jesus, I've got COVID. Mm. We won't be able to go. Mm. Oh, it was just awful. Like, it was quite stressful. Then the week we were gone, it was quite stressful. But we got there. We went up to the airport. And it was so eerie. There wasn't a soul in the place. It was so, so weird. But anyway, we got through all the testing and all that. It was fine. And we got to Ukraine. And
what, aside from that, what is that journey like emotionally?
The surrogacy?
No, the plane journey of you going on that plane over to see your baby.
Yeah, it was mad. It was just very surreal, I suppose. It really was. Like we're like, yeah, we're going over to meet our child. Like, and I was like, is this right? Like, you know, you kind of doubt yourself sometimes. Like, is this right? Like, and everything's above board. Like, everything is as legal as it comes. Like, everything's above board. But you are kind of like going, my God, like, what are we doing? You know? And then again, like the Lewis, like, you're on a flight and the flight was full. And I'm like, where are these people going? Like, are they going over to get their babies? You know, that type of way. Like, it's mad. It really is. It's just mad. So, yeah, we got there anyway, safe and sound. Everyone was fine. Got our accommodation. Everyone was fine. So we were there with a few appointments. prior to when Irina went into labour, and we actually finally met her. We met her on the Thursday, and she went into labour on the Sunday. But on Thursday, it was lovely. We finally got to meet her.
Oh, God.
And she looked so tired. I felt so guilty. I was like, are you okay? Like, she didn't have any English.
Right.
It was translated to her coordinator. And I was like, are you okay? You look very tired. And she's like, no, I'm fine. And she was out walking. And it was great. Like, it was great to meet her, like, and great to see her with bump, you know, that type of way. So that was fine. So then we went about our business anyway, and it was just a waiting game. We were waiting. It was a week, actually, yeah. And on the Sunday, it was the maddest thing in the world. So we were there, and it was a Sunday morning, and we just had breakfast. And I was starting to get fed up, like, because like that, Ukraine was in lockdown as well.
Mm.
So, and you were afraid to kind of go out because you were collecting your newborn baby, like, you know. So I was just getting fed up at that stage. And Nigel tidied up the kitchen, and I said, look, I'm going in to read my book to see if I can distract myself a bit. And when we got to Ukraine, I had, Irina had found me on Instagram. So we were communicating through Instagram, right? Oh, just gosh. Only when I went to Ukraine, right? And it was weird. So that was fine. So reading my book, I remind me on business, and my phone dinged. And sorry, previous to that, the coordinator had texted me really early that morning and said, no movement, there's nothing happening. I was like, oh, okay, grand, no problem. So that was fine. So next of all, the coordinator texted me again saying that Irina had gone into hospital because she had felt pains, which I'm assuming was contractions.
Yeah.
Like, their wording was kind of a bit hard sometimes, but I'm assuming that's what they meant. And didn't hear anything then for ages. So again, reading my book, that was grand. And next of all, phone dinged again, and it was Instagram, and I kind of wasn't paying any much attention to it, to be honest.
Mm.
And I looked at it, and a picture came up, and I opened it, and it was a picture of a baby. And I remember roaring at night. I was like, Nigel, quick, come in here. I was like, look at this. And I said the most stupidest thing to him. I was like, is this our baby? And it's just a picture of, you know, when the baby is literally first born and it goes on the scales?
Yeah.
Literally, that was, there was a baby in the scales.
And was that your baby?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. No explanation, no writing or anything. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Because we had just got a text to say there was no movement.
Hang on. Like, were you not going to be in the labour where?
No, because of COVID.
Right,
that
okay.
was the original plan.
Okay.
That you're able to be in the maternity house, or the hospital, they call a house over there, with them. But because of COVID, we couldn't go near the hospital.
Both of you could be in there. Is that the norm? Is both or...
No, yeah. Just one. Just one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was going to go in.
Yeah.
But because of COVID, we couldn't go near the hospital, which was a bit unfortunate. But look, you had to do what you had to do.
So,
like, I get a picture of a baby through Instagram reading me book, not knowing what the hell is going on. And Isaac's like, is that our baby? Is that? He's like, what are you talking about? Like, where'd you get this from? I was like, Irina just sent it to me. It has to be, like. And next of all, phone rang, and it was our coordinator to say, Irina.
Hang on a second, I just see.
Are your dog?
Yeah, the dog. Sorry, the dog is barked. Is it today? He'll be all right. Give him a sec. Yes, apologies for the interruption, but yeah.
Right. So
she texted you.
She, the coordinator rang me then.
Right.
And said, oh, Ruth, baby's born, weighing 6 pounds, and everything's going fine. And I'm like, what? Like, you literally just texted me not so long ago saying there was no movement or nothing. But I think what happened was, again, our coordinator said that Irina asked for medicine. So I said it to my mom and my sister, and they're saying that she might have got induced.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know what happened, but Lottie came anyway.
But do you not think maybe it was better that you just found out like that?
Oh, jeez, I don't know. My nerves were gone. When I just seen that picture, I was like, what the hell? Like, I didn't think for a second it was Lottie.
Yeah.
Not for a second. I was like, why is she seeing a picture of me?
She's sending you a mad random baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying, this is on the way for you. Yeah. I'm still here.
Yeah. So we were just over the moon, and... obviously we rang home and everybody was overjoyed. It was just amazing. Like, so when we all calmed down, like, so basically what happened then was the baby is taken away from Irina straight away.
Okay.
Because obviously she's not Irina's.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I felt sorry for Irina because she texted me later that day. And she's like, do you know how Lottie is doing? I told her name, and I was like, do you know how Lottie is doing? And I was like, yeah, she's doing fine. Did they not tell you? And she's like, no, they took her away and I haven't seen her. And I did ask, but nobody has told me. And my heart went out to her. Like, she's after giving labour. She's after carrying this child for 9 months, feeding the child, growing the child. They could at least have said, look, she's doing fine or whatever the case. We wouldn't have minded. Mm. You know, absolutely we wouldn't have minded. But they didn't. So that was fine. So that was on the Sunday. And then they had to make sure both baby and the surrogate were okay.
Mm.
So on the Tuesday, they both got discharged. So off we toddled to the hospital to collect our little baby. So we went anyway, and that was fine. We were sitting there waiting for Lottie to come down with Irina, and they both came down together. A nurse was holding Lottie and obviously came over to us, and we were just amazed and just couldn't believe that we were holding our little bundle of joy. Finally, like, you know, after 9 years, we get to hold our little bundle, like, just incredible.
Sorry, food. Paul? Sorry.
You can't.
Is that a moment? Waiting for her to come down.
Yeah, like I was getting, we were waiting for nearly 40 minutes and I was like, what's wrong? Like, is there anything wrong? And the coordinator was like, no, they're just getting her ready. They're just getting her ready. And I was like, well, you know, 40 minutes, like, you know, get a move on, you know. But when they came down, I could see Irina and my heart went out to her. Obviously, she was absolutely exhausted and I'm sure in extreme pain too. But she just looked sad. And that really kind of, it was hard to see, even though she was giving us our baby and she was so incredibly amazing for 9 months carrying a baby and everything else. It was very, very difficult. The nurse came over to me and gave me Lottie. And of course, we were overjoyed and I kissed her and hugged her and we were crying and everything else. But I turned to Nigel and I gave Nigel Lottie and I said, let's not make a big deal out of this because Irina's over there in the corner and she was so upset. And I was like, oh God. And that part of the surrogacy journey, I wasn't expecting. Like, we forget that our surrogates have feelings as well. And they've just given birth and obviously they're extremely emotional. And that was difficult. Like, she came over to me and she gave me a hug and I'm assuming she said congratulations. I don't know what she said something to me in Ukrainian. I don't know what it was. But my heart went out to her. And I couldn't fully celebrate Lottie because I was so conscious of her. Like, you know, my heart just went out to her. And yeah, it was tough. It really was tough. Like, and even Nigel, like, you know, he was getting a bit teary-eyed as well. And I was like, let's just gather our bits and go. Like, so off we went. Irina came out with us and we were getting a taxi. And I said to Irina, I said to the coordinator, is Irina okay for a taxi? Would she like to come with us and we can drop her back to her accommodation? And Cassandra was like, no, she's fine. She has a taxi ordered. And we just left. And I just, my heart just went out to her. I was like, oh, Nigel, this isn't right. It just isn't right. Like, as much as amazing what had just happened, but I just felt so guilty for Irina. I don't know why. I felt so guilty for her. And I felt so sad for her as well. And I could still see her and she was so upset. So we got back to our own accommodation and the whole newborn bubble started. Mm. And, you know, yourself, you don't know what you're doing. But between then and going home, we had to meet Irina and her solicitor two times. And when we met them, I always made sure I handed Lottie to Irina so she could cuddle her and talk to her and whatever she wanted to do. And she'd be blessing her and all, because the Ukrainian ladies are very religious. And she'd be blessing her and everything like this. And every time we left, she would cry. Oh, Jesus, do you know, I said to some of the girls, support group for surrogacy. And I was saying to the girls, prepare yourself for when you go over for the emotional side in relation to your surrogate. Not even when your baby or babies are born, in relation to your surrogate. It just floored me how more emotional I was about that, I think, than anything else, to be quite honest. Because she just cried. And like, I didn't know what to do. I just went over and I kept hugging her, even though you weren't supposed to hug because we were in lockdown. I didn't give a shit. I just had to go over and hug her. And I said, do you want to hold her? And she would take her and she would hug her and this, that and the other. And the next time again, it all happened again. And she was
Jesus
holding
rude.
Her.
That's torture
yeah.
for you as a person, because one, as you just said, the tug of war you must have been having with your emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
You're feeling sorry on this hand, and but so grateful.
Absolutely.
So grateful. And that's where your feelings were.
Yeah.
But then you've got your baby on this side. And it's, you know, it's something that if we don't experience it, and I'm so glad we got to talk because so many people were saying different things to me, you know, like, how's it work? And I was like, I don't know, guys. I literally don't know. And, you know, this is how it works.
Yeah.
And the ending is great, but it's pretty horrific.
The ending,
in between.
It's the most amazing thing in the world that you have your baby or your babies, something you've longed for and dreamed of for so, 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 so long. You have it, but then it's seeing your surrogate so upset. You know, it's just heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking. Like, and the last time then that we met her again, she was so upset about it again. And even now, I just said, no disrespect to Irina, but I'm glad this is our last appointment because
absolutely.
We can't do this.
Yeah.
We can't do this. Can't have her upset every time that she sees Lottie, like, you know. And it's only natural for her, of course it is. And we totally get that. And like, still to this day, we're in contact with Irina. Like, we're all sending her pictures and stuff, Lottie. Like, but that's the part that got me the most, I think, of the whole journey. I wasn't ready for that. And I hadn't built myself up for that. Because, like, none of the other girls had mentioned it. And the support groups or anything like that. And maybe I've just been silly thinking, like, oh, she'll just walk away. She'll be grand. But I think Irina as a person is quite an emotional person anyway. But that was tough. That was very, very, very tough. Like, really tough. Like, and then, like, you just think, like, what, she's going home now, like, and she still has her bump. And how is she? Is she okay? Like, is she depressed? Like, you worry about them. You really do worry about them. And that's why I kind of stayed in contact with her. And I was like, are you okay? You know, how do you feel? And she's like, oh, I'm good. You enjoy your family. And she was so, so nice about it. But my heart went out to her.
And you think that there's some people out there that I would be like, no, but that's their job. Like, not that's what I get paid for. Do you get, when people say that, but should I get paid for it? Like,
you know? But like, I had that conversation with Irina about that and about the kind of the financial side of it. They get paid for it and they get paid a nice amount of money for it. But they're doing it, as Irina said to me, Ruth, I'm doing this for you and Nigel to have your family. She says, I'm so overjoyed that I could help you have your family that you've longed for so, so long. And she says, it's worth more than money. Like, it's just amazing what I can do. And she's, even today, like, she was texting me saying, I'm so, so happy that I'm part of your life, that I carried your baby, you know, and your family of three now, and you're like, it's I can't describe it. Like, it's just, yeah, there's the financial part of it, all right, but I think it's a lot more for them. I think it's a lot more for our circuit anyway, definitely for Irina. It was a lot more, absolutely a lot more, you know, a lot more, just incredible.
And the question then on that, and we'll go a little bit further and chat about Lottie, is because I want to ask a question now, is would you do it again? And would you, and you do advocate for it, like, that people do it? Or how are you feeling about that?
Like, I mean, I'd have to see what Mr. Credit Union said to me first. Like, it's not cheap. It really isn't cheap. We were very fortunate that we could get the loans where to do it. So many people can't do it because it's quite expensive. And then you have your legal fees when you come home as well. So it is very expensive. I would do it again in a heartbeat. We have two more embryos over there in the freezer waiting for us. Whether we will or not, I don't know. It all depends. For now, we're just going to enjoy Lottie as much as we possibly can. We've been waiting 10 years for her. So we're going to just lap her up as much as we possibly can for the moment. And who knows what the future will bring, you know.
And then anyone else, would they come to you for advice on it? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, do your research. That's quite important. Do your research. Talk to a solicitor who is qualified in surrogacy and go from there. From personal level, I'd absolutely do it 100%. If you had the financial backing, I'd absolutely do it. Yeah, it's a crazy journey. Like, it really, really is. Your emotions are going to be all over the place, but it's so, so worth it. When you hold your bundle of joy, like, it's so, so worth it. One of my friends that I've actually gotten, I'm very good friends with now, through surrogacy. She's over in Ukraine at the moment. She had her little boy last week, little Christopher, and she just can't believe it. She just can't believe. She sent me pictures and she's holding the little man and she's like, he's mine. I was like, I know he is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just
magical.
Yeah, yeah. Like, as I say to some people as well, we don't do this surrogacy journey lightheartedly. Like, we all have issues. We all have health issues. That's the reason why we went down this route. Mm. It's the reason why all families go down the route, you know. Obviously, people have had health issues that they can't carry or whatever the case may be. It's the last resort of having a family. Like we said, like, obviously, if this wasn't going to work, that's it. We're just parking it to the side and just, we're just going to be a family too. And that was it. So if anybody was able to do it, I'd 100% recommend it. But be prepared for the ups and downs, the stress, the anxiety. It all comes with it, but it's well worth it in the end. Well worth it.
So tell me about bringing her home.
Oh, Jesus, bringing her home. She was the best baba ever. So we have to, over in Ukraine, we had to get what's called an emergency travel document for her to bring her back to Ireland. So we got that sorted and we hopped on the plane and we again went to get two flights because there was no direct. And she was good as gold. Jeez, she was so good. Like, she literally slept. Like, the two flights she slept. And that was at the time again with COVID. So the seat in between us was always free. Mm. So, like, she was only a toddler, God, you know. So she had her wrapped up and she slept in the middle seat.
God.
And like, the staff were amazing and all. Now, Nigel was fierce and nervous. Oh, was Jesus, he was fierce and nervous. He was afraid she'd be bawling her eyes out on the plane. And we'd be one of those families, you know, they shut up their baby.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
But she was so good. She was so, so good. We got home and got to Dublin. And at the time, again, nobody could come into arrivals. Mm-hmm. So my mum and dad are outside and they had the carry cot, and so there was a security man standing there and they could see the carry cot and they had a pink balloons hanging out. And your man, very nice man, mom said, came over to him and said, sorry, are you waiting on a baby? And mom's like, yeah, we're waiting on our granddaughter to come through. And he says, and it was a really cold February morning. And they're like, Jesus, you can't be standing here. Come on in, come on in. So mom and dad were like, oh, thanks so much. So we came through.
People are kind, aren't they? People are so kind.
They really, really are kind and generous. They really are. So we came through the doors and we were exhausted. I think it was just the whole, we're bringing a new 2-week-old baby home and playing, what are we doing? Like, we didn't have a clue. Like, and I think we were just so, you know, tensed up about it. So when we got back and when we came through the arrivals door, I've seen mom and dad there, but it was weird again with COVID. Like, we couldn't hug or anything. Mm. Like, mom had said, no, I can't touch us. Wait till we get to the car park.
Yeah.
And like that, we went back to the car park and she gave us all a hug and all. And we got into the car and Nigel said, thank God we are home. Thank God. Because it's hard over there as well. Like, we were there for 2 weeks and you've no support. Like, you've no family support. You've no friends. You're in a strange country. Lottie was very colicky and we're going to the chemist to try and get bits and bobs for her. And it's hard. Like, you know, there was one or two nights now where I was just like a basket case. I was ringing mom at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, she's screaming, what is she screaming for? You know, so it is difficult. So when we got home, it was such a relief. It was such a relief. And then I think then we realized, this is it. Like, this is our little family. We finally, I think when we got home to our own house,
yeah,
This is us. This is now. This is going to be forevermore, which we were just amazed about. Amazed. It was just, oh, it's just amazing. Amazing. Really is amazing. But yeah, and here she is, 9 months old now, you know.
So. Did you always have Lottie?
Yes, we did. Even before we started IVF, we always liked the name Lottie because Nigel's mom passed away a few years ago and her name was Loretto.
Okay.
So we used Lottie then. So we were delighted. We had other names, but we always came back to Lottie, you know. So, yeah, she's a great little baba.
What does she look like? Because it's your egg, so yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to know. Mm. It's hard to know. I think at the moment, I think she's a bit more like me.
Okay.
I had real chubby cheeks when I was younger and stuff like that. And she has that now. Like, but certain facial expressions, she's like Nigel. Like, right. She'd look at me in a way and I'm like, oh my God, that's your dad looking at me, you know.
Hilarious.
But she's a great little personality. She really is. Like, and she's kind of only starting to come out of herself now, like, you know. But, oh, she's great. She, the house is upside down. Like, I mean, I would have been a real stickler for a tidy house and, you know, but sure.
Goes out the window,
oh,
doesn't
stop.
It?
Yeah. Oh, but I couldn't care less. Like, yeah. She's there. She's happy. That's all we want, yeah. You know. And just, it's amazing. We're just overjoyed.
Good. Good for you. Ruth, tell me this. Right now in the media, we are seeing lots about surrogacies. And again, someone said to me, but what did she say to me? She said, oh no, but they have got rights. And I was like, no, I was like, I don't know the ins and outs of it.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell me about what's happening now?
Yeah. So basically in Ukraine, right, when we got Lottie's birth cert, we are down on Lottie's birth cert as her parents.
Okay.
So when we're in Ukraine, we're Lottie's mommy and daddy. When we came home from Ukraine to Ireland, the minute we land in Ireland, we're not recognised as Lottie's parents under Irish law. Absolutely barbaric. So she's legally unprotected until Nigel gets his parental order. So when we got home, our solicitor, Annette Hickey, started the paperwork for Nigel to get guardianship of Lottie. So we couldn't go to the High Court, but in normal circumstances, you go to the High Court and he will get granted his guardianship of Lottie. I have to live with Lottie for 2 years before I can apply for my guardianship of Lottie. So, like, I'm her mammy, but under Irish law, they don't see me as Lottie's mammy. It's just unbelievable. It's insane.
So what happens if, right, God forbid, Ryan, like, what happens if people split up and the father says, well,
I have absolutely no right. Me and I just split up in the morning. I have no right over Lottie. He can take her. And I can do squat diddly about it.
What?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. No right. Now, you can, yeah, you know, you could maybe do up a will or something. I don't know that side of it. Mm. But under Irish law, I have no right at all. If Lottie was to, you know, fall and break her leg in the morning and I had to rush into Temple Street, I couldn't sign any paperwork. I would have to ring Nigel, get Nigel to come up, sign the paperwork, because I'm nobody in Lottie's life at the moment under Irish law. It's just unbelievable. It's heartbreaking and it's unbelievable. Her as a child doesn't have the same rights as your kids at the moment either. Like, it's just unreal. Like, I can't stress how annoying and crazy it actually is. And that's what we're trying to do at the moment. The assisted human reproduction bill is in with the government at the moment. They're reviewing it, and surrogacy is in it. And there was articles there in the paper 2 weeks ago saying that, now we don't know if it was true or not, but they were saying that they were going to defer international surrogacy for another while, as in they're not going to put it into the bill. And we're just like, oh no, this can't happen. This just can't happen. So an organisation, Irish Families Through Surrogacy, they've been campaigning for this for a very long time. And they organised the demonstration on Tuesday. They've been in talks with several politicians, TDs, ministers, and they all backed them up 100%, saying, yeah, we're behind you. This has to be passed. You know, there's no problem. Leave it with us, da 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 da. And then we get this article in the Times about it. We're just like, what's going on? So we had the demonstration. It was really good. Got great media coverage. And, you know, it was actually a lovely demonstration, because it was all families that had children through surrogacy. Like, Lottie was there. There was twins there. There was two gentlemen there who had their children as well. It was just beautiful to see. Like, it was a really special and emotional morning to see all the children, because that's what it's about. It's about them. And yeah, basically we were handing, well, not myself, Irish Families Through Surrogacy, we were handing letters into the government to state that basically we need this passed. We need international surrogacy to be recognised in the bill in order for our children to be protected. Me as Lottie's mother, I'm not entitled to any maternity benefits. So I can't claim state, you know, the maternity benefit that you would have got. I am not entitled to that. They won't give me that. It's unreal. Like, it's
like children's allowance, stuff like that.
Children allowance, yes.
Okay.
But not the maternity benefit.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
God,
it's just it's so wrong. Like my child isn't different to your child, so why treat them differently? Mm. Do you know that type of way? Yeah, they were born in a different country. Absolutely, yeah, we recognise that, but they're still the same. They're an Irish citizen. Like Lottie be getting her passport. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And it's just wrong. Like it's leaving them children in limbo, like them not knowing what's going on. Like you know, like even for school, or if I had to put Lottie into a creche. Like going back to work, I couldn't sign any paperwork. Nigel would have to sign it. So I'm nothing to Lottie under the Irish law. Like, you know, it's just crazy.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, it is bonkers. It's wrong. It's really, really wrong. They are passing domestic surrogacy, which is great.
Mm.
But not all of us have
a sister. Is there such a thing as, yeah, is that done that much here, would you say?
I don't think so. No. I think maybe 70-80% of it is international surrogacy. Yeah. Because people don't have sisters or, you know, friends or, you know, I know, like, I wouldn't ask my sister to do it. I just wouldn't. And, you know, if there is someone out there that would do it for a person, that's fantastic. But more Irish couples will go abroad to do surrogacy, like, you know, and it needs to change. Like, in England, they sent in under their law in the 1980s, they cleared it, like, and they have in their law that when you come home to the UK with your child, you both get granted parentship of your child. And that's the way Ireland should be. Like, they need to come up, you know, a good few years and just get with the programme. Like, it's been going on for 21 years, you know, and they've gotten so far. People that have done this previously have gotten so far and it's just stopped. And we have to change it. It's just
not fair. Why are we so behind it?
Oh, I do not know. I do not know. And it's so frustrating, like, because I know there's a fear there, and people will say, like, oh, you know, but surrogates to get exploited and all this, you know. That's not the case. If you go to the right places, if you have the right legal profession for you and your surrogate, that won't happen. They'll be as safe as houses, like you are, and yeah, they'll get financial gain out of it. So there shouldn't be any reason why the government shouldn't pass it. There really shouldn't. Like, it's becoming more and more common now. Mm. Like, I mean, IVF has become more common now. And people now are only starting to talk about it, which it's amazing. But then you do have the people that don't want to talk about it. They just do it in their own private way. But it's becoming more and more, like, and like, who's to say, like, that Lottie, like, when she gets to my age or your age, she doesn't have to do this, yeah. You know, that type of way. Like,
do you think it's the church?
I think it does have a part to play in it. Yeah.
Isn't it mad? Like, I had a conversation with Paul Stenson recently, and he was saying things about the Catholic Church that I didn't necessarily, because I have to be very clear that I, you know, I'm Catholic and I appreciate God and I do all that. So I have to be very clear in the sense that when Paul was talking about God and he wasn't talking about God, he was talking about the church and the Catholic Church.
Mm.
And what he was saying, I didn't agree with, and I did say that to him, that I didn't necessarily, I valued his opinion, but I didn't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
But just sitting here talking to you, saying that, it's like light bulb moment, Rebecca, this is the church.
Yeah. My mom always said that, my granny passed away last October, and my mom always said that, if my granny had Alzheimer's, but if she was in her sane mind and she was still here and I told her we were expecting through a surrogate, she would have went bananas, because she was an extremely religious lady, which is fine. That's absolutely fine. But there would have been World War III in my granny's house if I had to tell her what we went through, because like that, it wasn't the right thing to do by the church. And I do think it has a small part to play, but we need to move on.
But I just don't understand how the church has that power. But I definitely think, because what else would it be, Ruth? Yeah. Like, what else would it be?
Yeah, it must be. It really, I don't know. It must be. It has.
That's
to
a can
be.
Of worms. That's like now my head is going to every little. I'm like money. Yeah. Like it's that's a can of worms. But that is.
Yeah, it's mad. It's mad. It's mad, but it's awful to think that there's so many children out there that are unprotected at the moment because of our Irish government. It's wrong. It's frightening, you know. And even there tonight, I know there's a gorgeous couple going on Virgin Media tonight. Yes. Did you see that?
I seen it. It's going on. Yeah, I seen it on your page. Did you put it on your page? Yeah.
Like, Kathy's husband is very, very ill at the minute.
Okay.
And he said he wanted to do this to show the government and show people that, you know, if anything has to happen to Nigel or to any husband, I'm left in limbo. What do I do? You know, what rights do I have with Lottie? Like, and you can't have that. Like, that lovely family that's going to be on telly tonight, like, they're going through the most worrying times of their lives, and they shouldn't have to worry about their little boy and his state of affair and his protection. That should be the least of their worries. Like, they, you know, Kathy should know that her children are safe. Mm. She doesn't. And that's awful. On top of what they're going through at the moment, shouldn't be the case. It's wrong. You know, it's really wrong. And the government really need to pull up their socks. And they really need to do something, because it's not right.
How can people help? How can listeners help?
I suppose just following Irish Families Through Surrogacy on social media pages. They're campaigning really, really hard. They're doing an amazing job. And just to share everything, that's on social media at the moment, and talk about it, you know, just talk about it so much. That's all we can do. Get in contact with your TDs, your ministers, your counsellors, anyone at all. Get in contact with them. Keep the pressure on. Like we did, there was word that the government was now considering bringing it back in, international surrogacy, into the AHR bill. They're actually going to have a joint Oireachtas committee.
Okay.
So these people are going to do their homework, they're going to do their research and everything, which needs to be done. And this is going to go on for 4 months.
Okay.
So early next year, we need to kind of keep going as much as we can, like, to keep the pressure on, because it can't not go into it. It's just too important for all of our children. It's way too important. They're so precious. Like, it took us all so long to get there. It took us all so long to have our families. We're not going to lie down until our families and our children are recognised. They have to be. They just have to be, you know.
And on that note, Ruth, we leave it there.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for opening my eyes to your life and your story. It's crazy. Mm. It really is. So thank you, because you spoke so well and so eloquently about your journey. So and I know it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.